Yeah, basically, I think for the last 4 days, I've actually not had a drink or any food at home. Yeah, for four
Welcome to my
days.
life.
Yeah, just walking out at seven, not coming back till about 10 midnight or something.
Okay, no, that's not what I do. I work from home, but then I have all my food and beverages outdoors,
Oh, well, you
which
live in
is
Spain though, so that's a crime to cook indoors when you're in. Well, it's a crime to kind of spend time in your own kitchen when you can get some great food outside, isn't it?
kind of, yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Mo, really good to see you, and welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on air. It is episode 147, bringing it to you every Friday, folks. I'm super excited to chat with you today because this is actually one of the. I'm going to try and do this particular topic every year, I think, because it is something that is super interesting, I think, to anybody who is recruiting for candidates doing talent acquisition. And it's rare that we get sort of the opportunity to really explore what the data behind it is in terms of how to optimize your job postings. So I don't think we can do this every week, but I definitely think we can do this as an annual. So super excited to bring this topic to you. And yeah, we're gonna get into it. I know that sort of acquiring candidates through job adverts has been one of the biggest problems this year. Massive slowdown in terms of applicant flow. How do we optimize for that? So if you're here and you're watching, you want to improve how you kind of your adverts work, this is the show for you. Okay, before we kick off, just do some housekeeping as usual. I just want to do a quick sound check, everybody. So if you can hear me okay on Crowdcast, can you just indicate in the chat to let me know that you can hear me okay? We should be blasting this out on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn Live, are you there? Let me know with a comment. Can you hear me okay on LinkedIn? We should also be going live on Facebook and on Twitter as well. So multi-channel blast out. Everyone is gonna get a bit of Brain Food Live today. Oh, okay. Some people are saying they can hear me fine. Right, a quick word to our sponsors today, and we couldn't do the show without our sponsors because they are Appcast. They're the guys that have the data. I think they're one of the maybe the number one sort of programmatic advertising product out there. So if you haven't heard of programmatic advertising, you don't know what it is, or you want to find out more, definitely check out Appcast. They're a business that basically are leading the way in terms of how you can optimize where basically how you optimize your job ad spend. And I think if you're posting at scale, you're hiring for any kind of volume, you really want to get away from this individual selection and job posting. You want to use a product like Appcast. So I've just shared a link in the chat stream there. Make sure you check it out. We've got Robin Stander here. I've kind of taken him away from his busy day. He's going to drop in and share some knowledge with us later. Anyway, I want to welcome one of our good friends to the show. It's Modi Arakam. It's good to see you, Mo. Thank you
Hey
for
there.
being co-pilot today.
I'm very excited to be here, as
Well,
usual.
Mo, by the way, I was complimenting Mo on her skin tone. Wouldn't you agree that there's something like really strangely? I mean, I compare it to my own face, and I feel ashamed as to the comparison here. I need some
Didn't do
products.
anything,
I need
for
some
the record.
products. Has anybody got any anybody got any advice? Help me out. I'm a man in need. Okay, Mo, for the people who don't know you, can you introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Modiara, but everybody calls me Mo, as what Hong is doing. So feel free to to mention me that way in the chat. I have spent the majority of my career in the recruiting and branding industry. I'm currently on board at Boston Consulting Group, leading their employer brand strategy for EMISA. It's basically a mix between Europe, Middle East, Africa, Latin America, and Russia. So, very interesting mix in terms of cultures. Having a blast while doing it, and big fan of being part of this Brain Food Live today.
Well, thanks for sort of spending some time with us, Mo. I know that sort of when you're working for a big consultancy like BCG, this is probably like I should pay you like a $2,000 or something for the 20 minutes for your
No,
effort.
stop it. No, I'm just very excited to be here. And I'm very happy that you're actually bringing it up in a data-driven way, which is, yeah, one of the things that I basically live on. So,
And I'm going to ask, ask you about it. So in terms of your experience with BCG, whether you had any exposure on that, and whether, you know, in your previous time with Amazon, whether you did any work with sort of looking at the data of how, you know, applicant flow works. But before we dive into that, we always kick off by reviewing the newsletter first. So I need to ask you, Mo, did you read the newsletter last week? And if so, what was interesting about it?
Yes, of course. I read the newsletter every week. That's what I should do. So, but I think looking at the articles, there were actually three of them that stood out to me. One was the one about the metaverse, and the recruitment fair. I think, I think the metaverse in general is just a very interesting topic, right? Because if you look at the article that you shared, it's kind of this person describes, you know, the recruitment fair that he visited, I think, and sharing about, you know, it's an interactive display and you can walk around the crowd, but the what did he say? The interaction was a little bit challenging. And it kind of reminded me, or it made me wonder, like, would the metaverse then be like also an additional virtual event platform or like virtual conference space, or is it more than that? I have an Oculus myself because I'm just very interested in this space. I know that you do too, Hung. So
We should have a game or something. I know Stan's always telling me, I'll play you in this. But yeah, we'll sort of game out or whatnot, definitely.
Yeah, but I think in general, like the metaverse is just, you know, it's really like discovering what is the internet. And there's this very awesome YouTube video about Bill Gates explaining this to David Letterman. I'll share it in the chat later. And then they basically explain what the internet is. And I feel that we are now in the same phase with the metaverse, where the metaverse is basically giving you this knee-jerk reaction, you know, where you're like, okay, let's define what it is. Is this actually something? And then looking at it from a recruitment perspective, it's just, yeah, I don't know. I think it's very, maybe it's an aspirational thing, or, and you have many different, you know, views on it. Like, is it going to be a metaverse in AR or in VR? And, you know, is it a consumer or a business opportunity? And all these type of questions around it. I think from my point of view, it will definitely be the next chapter for the internet. And I want to tap into it as much as possible. So you see like the low-hanging fruits.
Let me know when you do anything at Boston Consultancy Group in the metaverse. I'd love to get an
Well, we're actually doing something here, which is what I really like as well. So I think we tap very well into that low-hanging fruit. Like, we try to combine it with like training or online collaboration and maybe entertainment, but then more in terms of conferencing. So I do know that one of the entities from BCG called Gamma, they recently opened an office, basically, like a headquarters, we call it, in the metaverse with the support from Sandbox. I don't know if you know it, but it's like this community-driven platform, metaverse type thing. And what we're planning to do is basically, you know, do organize like public conferences or internal gatherings and also recruitment events. So I'm very much like running here thinking to myself, oh, how are we going to do this and what's going to happen? So if this is taking place, I'll let you know. So
totally let me know. I think we should we do a Brain Food Live in the metaverse, folks? What do you think? Like who amongst us here has actually got an Oculus device? I think its penetration is probably about like 1% of the entire pop. It's getting there, but it's still an expensive piece of kit. And it is a bit of a luxury item. I don't think it'll basically be the fifth or sixth device you will have. So you're going to be like a big tech person to have.
I think so. Maybe, you know, there's lots of other stuff which you can do with it as well. But this is a different conversation. But anyway, maybe we should send out like Oculuses to our candidates.
This is how I got my Oculus, because someone sent it to me. I forget who the guy was, but he basically ran the first metaverse HR conference in this world, and it was an amazing experience, I have to say, because the way in which you interact with somebody is kind of like an embodied way of interacting. Which is right now on screen, everyone's 2D. We've got used to it. It seems okay. But I tell you, the Oculus makes a difference when you can get close to someone, or you can leave them away, or, you know, you can disappear. And there's all kinds of different sort of sensations going on there. So I think it's worth exploring. You have to explore it. Half me thinks it is so interesting. The other half then thinks, look, accessibility is still going to be a critical issue. But let me know, folks, should we do something on brain food on the metaverse? Let me know in the comment below. Okay, what else is interesting from last week, Mo?
Lots of things are always interesting, but I think the future of skills. Personally, I am a big fan of keeping an eye out to figure out, okay, you know, where am I going in terms of my own job, but also what's happening in job country. Because, you know, if you look at the current labor market and how pressured everybody is in terms of, like, you know, there's a big scarcity, I would like to follow this development, because I think maybe I could potentially find or open new talent pools based on certain skills sets that we're currently kind of not linking to our job specs, but that could potentially connect. So I think, you know, I really try to make that shift toward, let's say, skilled-based recruiting instead of job spec recruiting. So that was a very interesting article.
It is. Sure. And by the way, on that post, I think it's some sort of weird GitHub page. So check it out. It's basically an interactive tool which allows you to do some filtering, and you can also search on certain skills and job titles to see the rate of change, or see what kinds of job titles or skills have changed over time. So I think they're measuring from 2015 to 2021. So you type in developer and it will say, okay, this is how developers are putting their skills and how they've changed in 5 or 6 years. So I think it's a bit of a clunky tool, but you know what? It's worth a shot and worth exploring. Why not? You know, we need more of this information. So it's a GitHub page pulling LinkedIn data. Give us one more before we dive into this topic.
Well, actually, I was a bit cheeky because I think there was one other article that linked so well. It was from your previous Brain Food letters. It was about the dark social marketing. Mm-hmm. I can share the link, but just kind of as a refresh, dark social, like the term used to kind of describe certain website referrals or tracking efforts that we cannot track as marketeers. So for everybody who's listening, like dark social traffic, it's kind of your traffic, but that doesn't have a specific source. So it's kind of, you know, the invisible share. Mainly done by Generation Z. So you have to think of it like, you know, email, text messages and everything, like places where you can't track the activity, but people are still talking about your brand. And I think, it was just very, I'll share this article because I think it's very interesting in the extension of what we're going to talk about today, that yes, there are certain elements that we can track, but there's also stuff that is now coming up and that we cannot track. And then the question would be, how can you create effective marketing if you don't even know how the people are talking about you? Or,
well, we're going to go into that, because what is the future of tracking? Because you look at how we're progressing on it, there's clearly like a movement against tracking in general. And I'd be interested to know how it affects programmatic, how it affects attribution generally, how it affects even marketing as a whole. Because if we don't know who's interacting with what, aren't we just going to go back to marketing as it was when there was no tracking and essentially just blasting out everything to everyone? And it'll be
I don't think so.
Chaos.
No, I don't think so. I have an opinion about this, but I'll share it later.
Right. Well, let's talk to you before we bring on our guests. Let's talk to you about this topic itself. Job ads and job ad flow. How would you describe sort of, is it accurate to say basically the applicant flow has been kind of collapsed this year? Last 12 months, it's been a complete difference from the year before, where there were a lot of candidates. Now it's like zero candidates coming through. Have you been able to track that internally in your own business and maybe the stuff you did previously?
I think that the difference between my previous role and this role is that, you know, it's a total different approach and a different volume. And to be honest, if I speak with my former colleagues, they don't really see that collapse. But I do think that there are you know, like certain pools where there's just basically nobody available anymore, and you just have to find different ways to connect. So I think especially in the tech world, for example, which was always the case, but even makes it worse. But then I also believe that that's even worse now. But I also think that it's, you see a very interesting shift between, let's say, the big corporates now pulling back people back into the office, and then maybe lots of people within tech are more interested in, let's say, a remote opportunity. And then you have all these startups and scale-ups who could never connect with this experienced candidate, but now because of the job offering they suddenly can.
So that's a very interesting point to make. I wonder how much of the candidate shortage is based on candidates kind of waiting to see what their employers are going to do with back to office, because the employers haven't been very certain on this. They've been backwards and forwards. They've been saying, okay, everyone's back, and then actually we're doing that, you know, 6 months down the line or whatever it is. You're going to hold fire until the office, until the company says, we're definitely doing this. Then you're going to say, you know what, do I like that or not? And maybe you come back into the marketplace. So and maybe we're going to start to see a spike of applicants again as a result of this.
Could be. And there was also an article in your newsletter from this week, actually, about the tax and everything, like from working abroad and working in different countries than where your employer is based. And I think that that is also very much connected to the decision of the current employers. Like, what are we going to do? Even if we're going to let people work on a remote basis, like, how does it work in tax wise? But I found that a very complicated discussion, so I didn't want to tap on
it. It is. It's a topic for another show, but we're going to have to do it because, you know, it's critically important. We're hiring people globally. Let's say we do have a component of the workforce that's definitely remote everywhere. I think that's what most companies will probably have, that component where there's a part of the workforce that it can be located anywhere. But how do you actually go ahead and hire that person and deal with local compliance issues? So it's a big deal. Okay, let's bring on some friends here. They can help us have a chat. I'm going to bring on the two Yelmers first because, you know, they're kind of like... let me just do that. Let's bring on these two guys, see how they get on. Yelmer Zoudema, is that how you pronounce it, Mo? You give me some
Zoudema.
Zoudema, and it's Yelmer Koppelmans, isn't it? Koppelmans I can do. Zoudema, I don't know.
You're close.
But I'm hoping, I can't remember the last time they were both on, but they were really smart contributors. There it is.
Hey. How are you?
Hey, great to see you guys. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Okay, so listen, Yelmers, welcome back to the show. Can you kind of both introduce yourselves, who you are, what do you do? And we all know you work together, but do an individual intro. Yelmer Zed, can you give us your intro first?
Yelmer Zoudema, you almost pronounced my name correctly. You always do. You always try and you always do better, so it's improvement. Yelmer Zoudema, we mainly focus on the technical side of online marketing, and the only focus we currently have is recruitment. And I think that is well introduced.
Great stuff. Okay, how about you, Yelmer K?
Not too much left for me to introduce, but I'm focused more on the technical side of stuff, and Zoudema more on the creative and content side of stuff. So super happy to be here again. Very nice.
Great stuff. Well, thanks for joining the show again, guys. I think it has been about a year since we last brought you on. And the topic is, I think, pretty straightforward, because it's interesting to examine sort of where we are in terms of job advertising, because we've had this really interesting period, last 12, 18 months, maybe even 24 months, where we've had firstly, year one of pandemic, a massive surge of applicant flow. No one could handle it. Everyone's getting hundreds of applications. It was complete chaos. Everyone thought, no, we need like assessment tech to get rid of all of this. And then like 12 months down the line, suddenly there's no candidates. Applicant flow seems to have disappeared. And everyone's thinking, right, I need to do sourcing again. Can you give us your view as to why that has happened? And is it actually borne out by the sort of information that you guys have with the companies you consult with? And what is the recommendation today in terms of how to optimize job advertising? Should we go with you first, Yelmer Zoudema?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. I think that there are lots of answers to discover, or lots of topics to discover to give you a clear answer. I think that what we are currently seeing with most of our clients is that the inflow is staggering stopping. We get less inflow and less, but we do still see some quality applicants coming from job advertisement. So I do still think it's possible. I do also think that the technical side of things, the media itself, make it difficult for us. We come from an era that I would like to call the Wild West of targeting. Everything was possible. Everything was, well, it was easier to target. And now that everybody is seeing privacy as an issue, it's becoming more and more difficult.
What is? Go ahead, Yama.
Oh no, so on you. I was just.
Yama K, you want
yeah,
to?
Yeah, sure. I think Wild West of targeting is definitely one thing. I think the Wild West of tracking also is one thing. I think it's becoming more difficult, and with very good reasons, to track online behavior. And I think that's a good thing, as in privacy is very important. But that means that people working in the space need to become more technical. And I think that's a nice challenge, because if you want to measure, or at least if you want to improve, I think you have to measure. And if you have troubles with measuring, then how will you improve? So it's an interesting time at this moment.
And some of the major changes that have occurred over the last couple of years with regards to the ability of companies to accurately target, I mean, some of them they're quite famous, aren't they? So, for instance, Apple deciding to do opt-in rather than opt-out, that obviously is kind of new to Facebook on mobile, at least. What other things can you tell us that, you know, from a legislative point of view, that have caused, you know, significant impact in how we track and target?
I can take the one. Yeah, I think if you go all the way back to GDPR, I think that was kind of the first major hurdle that was taken. AT&T, the thing that you described, the thing that Apple introduced, is a big thing. But mainly, I think browsers are making it more difficult for advertisers to track them. So like Safari, for example, or Firefox, they've already implemented the ability to prevent tracking, which means that it's very difficult to track applicants or any behavior on your career site. And definitely with the intention, at least it's still an intention, of Google Chrome going to block third-party browsers, third-party cookies in 2023, it's going to be a big challenge. I think it's like a cat and mouse game of advertisers trying to track as much as possible. And, I don't know, privacy companies together with browsers trying to prevent as much tracking as possible. And I think this cat and mouse game is driving people towards needing to resort to more technical challenges or more technical solutions. But I think if you want to go all the way back to like GDPR, I think that's kind of where a big part of this movement started.
Go ahead, Mo.
No, what I but maybe you guys know more about this, but what I always kind of am thinking in my head is that there will be a future where we as candidates or as consumers will be able to basically say, hey, this is the type of data that I want to share, which basically will be not your online profile, but maybe then your online algorithm, and that will talk with the algorithms from the advertisers. And then that way you will still receive personalized, you know, recruitment ads and whatnot, for example, but then based on the preference that you set. So, you know, we could all work in this like, oh, we need to find tech solutions, but what if you would just give the power to the candidates or the consumer?
Yeah.
Is that something?
I think if you ask someone, nobody will probably like to share their data, at least not voluntarily. So I think there's been initiatives. I think like, for example, Brave is a browser where you can get rewards if you share your online data. They haven't really kind of, although their usage increased, I don't think it really has kind of taken a very big leap. So I'm doubtful if people are willing to share their data, and I'm doubtful if companies are willing to kind of accept a restricted view on an applicant or even an online consumer.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
but also, that's I hope so.
Right? I think that from companies, that would be a change of mindset. But I don't know, from the candidate perspective, we say that we don't want to share a lot, but let's be honest here. I mean, if you visit a website, you will always accept all the cookies. Like, I never read the cookie policy, at least. Like, I don't know about you guys, but you know, I just click on allow and then I'll just browse through the vacancies, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think that's also just because their cookie consent banners are formed in a way that they're just optimized to consent.
Definitely.
if you ask them on the street, read this policy and do you accept? I'm pretty sure no one will. So
I do think there's another party in this discussion, the role of the big tech, or the big tech that we know in this conversation, like the Facebooks and the Googles. Do they want to share all the information they do know from you? And how can you make sure your profile fits with all the advertisers that are out there? Do they want to share the data with each other and their knowledge about you with each other? I think that's also a very, very important point to make if it's about data, because Google doesn't like Facebook and Facebook doesn't like Google. And there are more out of
I can
of
name the... others. Yes, for sure.
It's going to be very interesting to see where we are. I mean, Joanna, I totally get what you're saying. I think most people probably would agree with Joanna in the chat there that the default is to defend it, have a defensive mentality and say no to tracking. I'm pretty much pro tracking because I would say, yeah, sure. But mainly because I think I'm immune to advertising. So this is my personal arrogance, right? Like, show me your ads. I don't care. I ain't going to buy it. you know, I really ain't going to do it. I can think of no single case in my entire online life where I've literally looked at an advert and thought, oh, I'm going to make a purchase decision there. Never happened. So I think that in many respects, ad tracking is ineffective at the base case. We've kind of sold the idea that it was effective because it was better than not tracking. It seemed that we were doing something. But now we've gone the other way by saying, oh, we have to protect privacy. And I think what we've done is actually created a horrendous experience for people browsing the web. Because as you say, Mo, all we're doing is like literally clicking accept. And we've basically trained ourselves to click that button. So there's going to be moments where things will pop up where actually it is important for us to say no to whatever it is that's happening. We've just trained ourselves to immediately say yes to it. And boom, we've just signed something that will cause different problems.
Yeah. Based on that, I would say, what if you had the opportunity to just set up your profile once and then you will never have to click that button again and you can just go everywhere and then your ads are all very customized. The only danger that I see there is also that maybe you will kind of not get any ads outside of your own bubble. So then you will have your own online bubble, which will probably also be your offline bubble on the long term.
That's a good point. Like new discovery is a discovery of new things will be eliminated if you allow the individual user to absolutely curate what they see online. Because you're assuming that configuration will be permanent or fixed. Whereas in fact, actually we evolve a lot, you know, sometimes I don't want to look at this Rolls Royce, but you know, maybe I need a new car. Yeah, sure. So I would change my kind of attitude based on, you know, how rich I am or how poor I am.
Or with jobs, for example, like if you're never informed about, you know, new type of job or job titles that are out there because you've only like set your mind onto that recruiter role, then yeah, maybe you'll miss out and then you're just stuck in this.
Or even broader companies. What if I tell you that I only want to see jobs for a certain amount of companies, but I don't know what's out there. So who tells me that my set of companies is the set I should go for?
We don't even know what we like is often the case also. And I think the job discovery process as a candidate is often about the discovery. Like you then find it out to think, oh, I'd never thought of potentially, you know, checking out this role or that kind of company until I've been presented with this option. So it's interesting to see where we're going to go. But the direction of travel, at least, we know where it's going to be. It's going to be more and more private as we go. It's going to make it more difficult for advertisers to be effective with the budget that they're getting. We seem to be paying more for job ads. Is that correct? I mean, has this year seen, like, I've heard rumors that job boards are sticking up their numbers and stuff like this. So it seems like, hey, it's more expensive. It's kind of less efficacy in terms of results and it's getting harder and like recruiters are burning budget. So how do we do it better? What's your advice to job posters in terms of how they can improve their return?
I think being more creative. So there are constantly new channels popping up that you can experiment with. I think we have to kind of form a creative and experimenting mindset because stuff changes so quickly that if you pin yourself to concepts that you have tested two years ago, and you kind of take them as for granted, I think it will never work. So experimentation is definitely kind of, I think, the way to go. I think there's always room for improvement, and there's always going to be effective channels. When people are new to a channel, advertising costs will just be less because there's less competition. If you find more creative ways to target on Google Ads, for example, then you're good to go. I think just being creative and being experimental definitely is the way to go.
And I also think that the broader the audience is, the more complete and honest your advertising should be, because your content is the first filter and you can show it to the very broad audience. But if the audience doesn't like the content you show, it's already the first filter in making sure people don't click and your cost per click stays lower than if someone should have clicked. It's also right. Really interesting to see that content is really developing this trend.
On that note, Yelma, would that actually inform how you would write a job advert? I get it that there's content prior to that's dissociated with the job advert per se, but when I'm writing the advert itself, do you think there's commentary in there that might be useful? Actually, no. By that time, the person's already clicked on the ad, haven't they? So they would have already seen it. So pre-click, you need to deter the wrong candidate, basically.
Exactly. You want to make sure that only the right candidates click, because you only want to pay for candidates that you actually would like to have on your website.
So what does that mean? Does it mean you should like explicitly and declare that? I mean, there was something that was interesting in the weeks before Recruiting Brain Food, where some American companies didn't want to declare salary. So they didn't want to deal with residents who were living in Colorado, because apparently a US citizen in Colorado is entitled to demand salary transparency. And so they would explicitly say, nobody from Colorado apply for the job. I mean, should we start saying that to reduce cost per click?
I think that this is more of a recruitment question, but if the information is aware, or if the information is ready to be shared, then we should share it. Why should we keep it a secret? Why should we, well, not lie, but keep issues or not onto the surface, on the surface, when we can make sure that they are not an issue anymore?
I remember, I know you're going to say something more, but let me just say this. I remember our friend Lars Schmidt. Lars, shout out to you if you're watching this. He said, yeah, you got to anti-advertise, you know, you like have an anti-brand. So in other words, your employer brand is, yes, we want to attract this type of person optimally, but maybe there's a bunch of people where, you know, our company isn't suitable and we should be kind of very, very sharp in saying that, because you don't want, people that wouldn't enjoy or thrive in your company to even go through the process. Waste of your time, waste of theirs. But I'm not sure whether that conversation can happen in today's kind of world where we have to be more inclusive, right? So it's difficult to be an anti-brand when we're talking about trying to expand the talent pool. So interesting. Mo, you're about to say something, I think, before I went on?
Yeah, no, it was just it was a very basic thought, I guess. But what I still feel is that, yes, we should be more transparent, but in traditional corporate environments in general, I feel that the salary is still often hidden because it's a cat and mouse game, you know, trying to figure out what the current candidate's currently on and what they're expecting and what you're then willing to pay. And I always see these LinkedIn articles about, you know, stop asking for my current salary and just offer me what you think I'm worth, which is maybe something I agree with, but working in corporate environments myself, sometimes I kind of get why we don't share it. So it's a very hard discussion, honestly.
It's impractical advice. I mean, if you're an experienced recruiter, what you want to do is your job is disaligned, unfortunately, with the needs of the candidate. You want this person to, you want to close the candidate. This is the language you're talking about. And that is your job. So yeah, you know, the reason why you collect the salary information up front, maybe don't declare your salary information in that unequal way, is because you're trying to get advantage in the negotiation. I mean, well, anybody
I don't know.
In negotiation
I think you're also excluding people. Think about it this way. I think you could also exclude people if you mention the salary bracket, because what if I want to earn 10K more than what you're offering in the job rec, so then I would not apply. Well, maybe the recruiter would be able to offer it for my profile if I show them that I'm worth it.
Yeah, there's all kinds of. I mean, we'll do a salary conversation another time. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. The default position of yes, everything should be public, I think I've got sympathy with. Like overall, I think that's generally the right approach. But at the same time, there's other effects that we need to understand. Like I fundamentally believe it has a suppressing effect, should I say, on the top level of salary, because a lot of the reasons why salary bands move up is competitive bidding. When you're competing for the top people, you will compete this way, and it will drag sort of the band up generally when you try this. We've seen it actually with competitive salaries now, where you know we're paying 250K for a recruiter, for instance. That would not happen if everyone was transparent on salary. You know, we're bidding each other. Yeah. So lots of reasons why salary will be problematic in that way. Before I bring on Robin to talk about the data from Appcast, just wanted to lean on the salary side a little bit. Is there a case to be made where putting salary in will increase applicant flow generally? I mean, forget about, you know, all of the moral or the ethical considerations. If our only interest is to increase applicant flow, sticking salary up there, do you have any information on that or any insights that you want to share, anybody?
Yeah, I worked for a Dutch company that needed a lot of people, so very much volume recruitment. I think it definitely works if your salary is competitive, as in if the main driver of working somewhere is salary, which I think works if you do mainly, for example, volume recruitment or blue collar jobs. I think salary is definitely something that puts you aside from the competitors much more than stuff like your culture or your development, which might be more interesting for people that are willing to stick for a job longer or where there is a more white collar culture. So I think it works if your kind of USP is salary, which might not be the best case, but for volume recruitment, definitely, I think, sometimes helps.
That's a very good point, Yelmer, because, you know, we often sell, again, we have the view that jobs should be, you know, a passion sort of project or whatever. We have this view of the of how it is, but I think the reality of it is lots of people don't have that feeling because they're sort of instrumentally working for this, maybe doing a job that they would prefer not to do, but they have to because this is the real world. And yeah, a couple of changes in the numbers makes the difference, because that's the decision that you're going to make. You don't like your job, you're going to do the job for the money. Someone's going to pay you slightly more. That's who I'm going to do it for. That makes perfect sense. And in fact, our own behavior determines this. If anybody's ever used like a gig platform, like a Upwork or a Fiverr or something like this, I assure you the numbers are super important for you when you're making a decision as to who you're paying for your little project, right? You set the number. You don't just individually do the due diligence on everyone there. You decide what you think the value is. So we are more numbers driven, I think we like to believe. Okay, let's bring on Robin on this. I'd love to get his view on more of a market-wide sort of lens and to see sort of whether... I don't think the report is ready as of yet, so we might not have like complete update data, but I really loved his presentation last year, and I think that you know, we have a rare opportunity to get this type of information. Oh, hey Robin, how are you doing? Good to see you.
Good to see you too. How are you getting on?
Yeah, very well, man. Very well. Robin, for the folks who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, I'm Robin Stander. I'm Vice President at Appcast. My background is I spent 11 years at TotalJobs.com, which is part of Stepstone Group, Europe's largest job board business. I was head of international sales over there. I left that business in 2016 to set up ZipRecruiter in the UK. Those guys have recently listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and it's there or thereabouts one of the largest aggregators in the UK. And I joined Appcast at the start of 2021 to launch our growth in the enterprise space. So good to be here.
Fantastic. And what a great CV, right? So you've been in this space for such a long time. Give us some info on where sort of the state of job advertising is. Like, I've painted this maybe a crude characteristic of saying, you know what, a job advert in 2020 would get you like hundreds of candidates, too much that you couldn't handle. But then in 2021 and now 2022, you stick the same advert out and you're getting dribs and drabs in. And it's like, oh my goodness, like, where are the candidates? Can you give us the kind of an aggregate view as to where what it looks like from your side, Robin?
Yeah, there is a huge amount of truth in what you've said there, Hung. It's entirely dependent on the role type and the sector, and obviously the location that you're advertising your roles in. I think over the last 21 years, since job boards sprung up in about 1999, people have advertised their jobs in much the same way. So you would approach a generalist job board and you would advertise a job with them for a period of 30 days. You would pay for that job advert, and depending on how the dynamics were appearing at the time, depending on how that job board was performing at that point in time, you might have the roof blown off or you might get zero response. That dynamic has fundamentally shifted over the last couple of years with the launch of programmatic, because what we do at Appcast is about casting the net as wide as possible. So you're not reliant on just one job board. You have the ability to leverage job seeker traffic from a much wider audience. And so on that basis, on programmatic, we see less of a decline in the overall level of applications coming through. But I can understand that on an average, people are seeing that decline, absolutely, particularly with everything that's going on in the macroeconomic environment right now.
Right, I see what you're saying. So basically, in some ways, you're saying that programmatic can insulate you from poor performance because you can switch the distribution of the or the presence of the job into different places, rather than sort of commit to a prepaid, which is what a job board is. It's a prepaid thing. You've rolled the dice. You basically thought, hey, I think this is a good idea. I'm going to give it a go. And then you just don't know whether it works or not. Whereas programmatic fundamentally changes the payment structure. It's based on the performance of the ad, and it moves in it. Sort of you would expose it in different places depending on the applicant flow. So
absolutely.
The point where you could switch it off if you have too many, or you could increase the surface area somewhere else if you haven't got enough.
That's exactly it. So it's not just us that do this. I can see there's a few other people on the chat, hi Steve, who also do programmatic as well. So the basic premise is that we know there are certain jobs that will always struggle, and then in turn there are some jobs that are very, very easy to fill. But you don't want hundreds of applications for the very easy to fill jobs, because it's just wastage. So the idea behind programmatic is you can put rules into the system in order to ensure that by the end of the month, every job has just the right amount of applications in order to make the required number of hires.
Yep. Go ahead, Mo.
You always see very well though when I want to say something. Yeah, no. Yeah, I agree. I work with this obviously on a daily basis, and I think it works very well. If you do it extra well, then you also connect it with, let's say, your recruitment data in the complete funnel. So you would actually potentially be able to set up things like, if you have X amount of people in your interview pipeline, then this ad appearance or display will decrease, and then you can increase another ad because you're still looking for more candidates, and you can extend that even up to, let's say, a hire potentially.
That would be really sophisticated, because that's almost like using the intelligence there to moderate your own effort internally, because you can imagine a lot of recruiters are actually pounding away doing sourcing when in fact there may be applicant flow is actually doing okay at another part of the system that they don't see. And in fact, they are better off switching their attention to a role that doesn't have that type of supply. So very interesting to see that, how that might work. Robin, taking it to sort of a practical point of view, one of the things I think Appcast are able to do is give us kind of this overview about how to basically create a better job ad. whether it's with programmatic or not. One of the advantages you do have is that you can figure this out. I wonder whether you could take us through some of those key points. I remember the talk you did at IHR a year or so ago, and I thought, wow, that's really interesting. Tons of people were like all over that that presentation. And in fact, my write-up of the presentation, I think, was the best performing post I did in LinkedIn. So obviously, you know, me using your presentation basically was like super valuable for me. But I wonder whether you could give us a reprise of where that looks like now. So in terms of like, when is the best time to post a job ad in the month? Is there a day in a month or a week in a month where you can say, actually, this is the optimal day?
Yeah, good question. So I think particularly in these uncertain times, when the market is very tight, we need to ensure that we're doing everything we can, everything possible to ensure there's no friction in the apply process. So we appreciate that pricing is going up, you know, across the board, but you can, in some respects, circumvent that by ensuring that you have a friction-free apply process and still win the same volume of candidates. So in reference to your question, yes, candidate activity is generally highest in the first three days of the week. So there's a general spike on Monday to Wednesday. There's a 22% uplift in candidate engagement between Monday and Wednesday. Starts to subside on Thursday, goes down a little bit more on Friday, and then it starts to fall off a cliff on Saturday.
Stop press. I can tell you right now, recruiters post jobs on the end of the week. Like they default to doing it as an admin task because they think, you know what, I'm already in the middle of this thing. First thing on Monday, they're speaking to a big stand-up or whatever. That already sets the agenda. They've got tons of stuff on the go. They think, all right, I've got to post the ad out. They don't do it to the end of the week. And by guess what? You're posting it at exactly the wrong time of the week. Do it on Monday.
Yes and no. So Sunday night is the perfect time to do it. Do it on Sunday night, and then the jobs are ready to go when the candidates start to engage on Monday morning. If we take it back to kind of pre-pandemic circumstances, you can make assumptions about when a job seeker is likely to apply. It's the old adage that they're on the train, they're commuting, they're going into London or into Amsterdam on the train. They've got nothing else to do other than either watch Netflix or apply for jobs. They've probably got Monday blues. They've had a great weekend. They're not looking forward to going into work. So they start to scroll through their phone because that's available to them at the time. And of course, job seekers can apply for jobs in different ways. So they can go onto a job board and they can click on jobs and they can apply there, or they will have been sent jobs by email directly into their inbox. So depending on how those jobs are being surfaced to them at the time, they will apply in different ways. So it's about making the process appropriate for them when they're online. So in the morning, usually between 7 and 9 when they were commuting, during the lunch period, and then somewhere from 7 o'clock onwards in the evening. Now, of course, the dynamic is somewhat shifted because a lot of people are now working from home and therefore they are less inclined to get caught in the act. And therefore they're going to apply throughout the day, depending on how they're feeling. But yes, Monday to Wednesday is generally where the uplift is. However, it's important to note now that mobile usage is increasing. So mobile applications is somewhere between 50 and 60% now. And actually you get more applications from people using mobile on the weekend. So where previously it would go Monday, Tuesday, and then it would decline throughout the week. Actually, it's when it's on mobile usage is largely consistent throughout the week and it starts to spike on Saturday and Sunday. Now that may be because of the particular type of individual that is applying for a job on their mobile. So if someone is working in the gig economy, transportation, logistics, warehouse, working in a bar, working in hospitality, they are more likely to apply from their phone.
All right, hang on. There's a couple of really important learnings there. So I think obviously we're treating advertising with one big brush, but you got to determine firstly what kind of work it is, because that will determine when the optimal posting time is. Now, if you're trying to attract a knowledge worker that sits in front of a keyboard and types into that, you want to basically post your job Sunday evening to catch Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If you're hiring for someone who is physically a blue collar person, doesn't sit in front of a computer, doesn't, the primary interface is the mobile phone, they're probably at work doing something physical on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They're not going to be able to interact with your ad. You got to do that on the weekends and post a job there. So that's really interesting insight.
Just to kind of confirm that. So if you look at the stats that we've got in terms of mobile applications, 85% of gig workers will apply for a job via a mobile, whereas 20% of technology-based workers will apply via mobile. They're all desk-bound.
Yeah, it's who stares in front of what, basically. We talked about Oculus at the beginning. And what is the primary device of the candidate population that you're trying to attract? We recruiters look into computers, sort of laptops and desktops all the time. We shouldn't assume that's the case for every type of person we're recruiting for. So we need to moderate that. If we're hiring for a different type of person, we need to think about what device they're looking at into most. Oh yeah, by the way, folks, if you have any questions for our guests, make sure you use the ask a question function. I've just seen a question pop in there. We're going to get to those in a moment. Okay, Robin, give us some other facts, man. Roll out some of the stuff that we need to know. Go on.
Yeah, so no, just in terms of mobile versus desktop, I think it's important to note that the length of your job description is incredibly important. So our data tells us that somewhere between 300 and 800 characters is the ideal length of a job description. So if it's less than 100 words or more than 1,000 words, then you cut your apply rate by half. So you're spending money on driving job seekers to your applicant tracking system. And then when they get there, your advert is either too long or too short. And as a result, they don't apply. So that's just money down the drain.
Let's repeat that. So 300 to 800 characters is the optimal length of a text-based job advert.
Which is quite broad, of course. But on mobile, and as I said, 50 to 60% of applications now come from mobile, the optimum length is 300 characters.
Yep, cool. Very, very interesting. Like we should obviously be putting into practice. I think most job adverts may well fit into that bracket in any case, but there's obviously some job adverts which are too short, and that's exposed by having a collapse of applicant flow. And there are some that are too long. Typically, if you've copied and pasted like some employer text or something, or maybe you've made the mistake of putting disclaimer type stuff onto your job ad. Like we've seen, there's almost like additional pressure for companies to talk about, let's say, their policies in terms of equity, for instance, or their policy in terms of CSR or whatnot. That is all like really important, but you may end up just stuffing the advert with too much text, and that could have the wrong kind of impact. So maybe that information perhaps needs to sit somewhere else, perhaps in the employer sort of page rather than the body of the job ad itself. Okay, quick break, folks. We always do this at the middle of the show. I realize we're running really short on time, so I want to make sure we get this one in. This is a super important sort of topic, and we don't want to use Brain Food Live as a bottleneck for this conversation. So if you want to continue the chat with anybody who is in the crowd or on the screen, take some time right now and share your LinkedIn into the chat stream or on a comment on the LinkedIn post or on a comment on the Facebook post. Share the LinkedIn profile now and then make sure you connect with everyone who's also shared their LinkedIn. So this should mean that at the end of this, you're going to have a bunch of people that basically care about how to post jobs in a more efficient and effective way. And hopefully these will be people that you can continue this conversation with. So don't allow brain food to be a blocker for you there. Let's give us some more, Robin. I mean, as we're grinding through on times, let's keep going. What else should we need? What else do job posters need to know to optimize applicant flow?
got loads of stats in my head. Job titles, Job titles are 100% absolutely critical when you're using job boards. So first and foremost, it's about thinking like a job seeker. So as you may have heard me say in the past, some people like to use rather elaborate job titles like sandwich artist or Java Jedi, development ninja, and things like that. These are the type of job titles that look attractive in principle, but the reality is they just won't work. There's a specific reason for that. All of the job boards that exist out there, and bear in mind in the United States there's over 10,000 job boards, and in the UK alone there's 500, and there's a very substantial amount in the Netherlands as well. All of them, the technology that sits behind these job boards is based on algorithms or machine learning that is built in order to ensure that job seeker intent matches with a keyword. So if you've got a job title, that job title needs to be clear and concise, and it needs to match with what job seekers are searching for. And if it doesn't, then you're going to find your advert on the fifth or sixth page where obviously there's no job seeker traffic at all. So it's about keeping it relevant. It's about keeping it somewhere between 1 and 3 words, actually between 50 and 60 characters in length, avoiding the use of any symbols or punctuation, just keeping it short and tight and not using internal job titles.
Right. So basically get the creativity out of the job titles, please. Yep. Use your imagination elsewhere in your branding. I think this is important for EB, right? Like a lot of people saying, hey, let's put, you know, creativity in the right place. Understand that the technology does keyword matching, and you need to you need to match what the person is searching for. Be very, very clear with this. What about people that put additional information into the job title? I've seen people like start describing location. They stick the location into the job title because they feel that they want to emphasize the location, or they put like seniority labels in there because they want to, you know, say, hey, we're looking for a senior this. Does that have any positive or negative impact, Robin?
It's okay to use words like senior to denote seniority, but putting the location or putting salary in the job title box will actually confuse the algorithm. So the algorithm is purely looking for the job title and it's not looking for anything else. There are other segments of the job board and how you post the job that is specific to location, specific to salary range, and all the other benefits. Anything else you put into the job title box ultimately pollutes the search and makes your job less relevant than other jobs that have only got the job title in there.
That's really important. I'm going to start refusing job posters that put like salary information into Brain Food Jobs, the only recruiting job board you need to use, by the way. Brain Food Jobs. People, I'm just approving everyone because I'm literally, you know, I'm a nice guy. You know, it's like, oh, this person needs to hire. Sure, I'm going to approve them. But what I need to do is correct them and say, listen, you've just posted a job there, and in fact, that's not the way you do it. Your behaviors on my job board, which is a small job board, there's only over 50 jobs on there, but if they're replicating that behavior on bigger job boards where there's tens of thousands of jobs, they may actually be burying the visibility of their job post in a place that they just simply won't work for them. So get the salary out of there. It doesn't work.
And also bearing in mind that approximately 40 to 50% of job applications would actually come from jobs by email. So the job board has sent you a list of jobs directly to your inbox. All of those jobs are served based on keyword and keyword versus location. So again, polluting the job title with other acronyms and things like that will ultimately mean that you don't actually fall into those jobs by email, and therefore you miss out on 40% of the traffic.
Yeah, super, super important, isn't it? Super important. Okay, give us some more, Robin. We might as well keep going with this.
What else? You were talking prior to me jumping onto the call, you were talking about benefits. So from our perspective, putting the salary in the job description is very, very important. I can absolutely understand why people wouldn't do it. In fact, I've just been advertising for a role and I didn't do it either, so I didn't even follow my own learning. There are reasons for that. I think particularly in the gig economy or in shift economy, it's, you know, you have to put it in there and it's very, very popular. what we do know is if you're not going to put things like salary in, then you at least need to put a range. And if you're not going to put a range, you need to use some verbiage, things like market rate or competitive or negotiable. You at least need to give somebody some level of information rather than it looking like you've just forgotten to put something there. That being said, you can still compensate by adding benefits. So the more benefits you add, if you add just two benefits, that increases your candidate flow by 55%. And that increases for every benefit you add all the way up to 7 benefits. Sorry.
You what? So basically what you're saying is like, just put more bullet points into your benefits bit, and that just increases applicant flow.
Yes, because candidates are looking, you know, what's in it for me? So usually when people write a job advert, they say, this is what the job is. These are the roles and responsibilities. And in some cases, they have a benefits section, which is great. And there's a little bit of about us, and they sell the company. But the reality is the candidate is trying to find out what's in it for them. Now, if the salary isn't listed and you haven't got anything in there in relation to, you know, attractive offices or remote flexi work, then you have to include things like pension, medical schemes, dental schemes, even if it's free coffee. Whatever you can in order to entice the candidate in will make you stand above your competitors. There are some sectors where there are 6 or 7 of exactly the same type of companies competing for exactly the same candidate. That might be true of something like HGV1 or HGV2. They're all looking for the same person. They're all based in the same place. So you might have a signing on bonus. You might give a free, like they did at McDonald's in the US, they're offering free iPhones for anyone who passed this 6-month probation. But ultimately, you've got to make it attractive for the candidate.
Yeah, and I love the... Go ahead, Yama.
I was going to say, I think much of this definitely holds true for getting more quantity, as in just more applicants. Do you also do research to the kind of effect on quality? Because if I want to get as many applicants in there, that's definitely one thing. But making sure that I get good and quality candidates in there is definitely another thing.
Yeah, not so much in terms of the research that we've done that looks at quality. However, and without making this into a sales pitch, one of the things that our programmatic technology does is when we work with an applicant tracking system, which is 100% of the time, we can do an integration that goes all the way through the hiring process. So what it then means is that we can optimize the performance of the client's spend to where the hires are being made or where the first interviews or assessment centers are coming from. So although we are invoicing the end customer on a completed application, we're actually optimizing the performance based on where the interviews are actually coming from rather than just applications.
Yeah, very interesting. And that integration is key, isn't it? I'm going to go to questions here because it looks like we're running short on time. This one here is from Steve. Let's go with Steve Rothberg. Okay. Realistic, however, most employers have people in technology. Hang on. Is there a technology available that would allow an employer to post a job to their ATSA on Friday but not have it then posted to job board partners on Sunday evening? So in other words, is there such a thing as a time delay in
scheduled ATS posting?
Yes.
That's the answer, isn't it? Scheduled posting. Yeah, you can do this. Okay. A second question. This is from Simela. Simela's saying, okay, not so much about the best time to post an ad, but what is the, is it critical to add about a company at the beginning of the job ad? Do candidates read it or do they completely ignore it? I guess we don't know, do we? But I mean, does anyone give this a shot? Open this up to everyone here.
Yeah, I don't have any specific data on that. But it feels like common sense to do it. Obviously, it entirely depends on the industry sector and it depends on the type of candidate you're trying to attract. I would make the assumption, particularly for white collar roles, where it's incredibly competitive and potentially people are looking to move themselves up the ladder. And one of the reasons why they're trying to move is because they're trying to go to a better company, then absolutely you should be trying to sell the benefits of working for that company.
I think it also very much depends on kind of the employer brand of a company. So for BCG, exactly. For example, I can imagine there are certain type of candidates applying, but maybe BCG is so much more awesome than I can imagine, which probably it is. Then I think kind of the step of informing people about the company and how great it is. It probably happens before job ads, which I think they are the ideal place to tell all the great benefits of a company. It happens also for passive candidates, for example. You have to kind of make them aware of how awesome a company is. And I think that's just one step ahead of the job ads.
You know what? Go ahead, Mo.
Sorry, I know you want to wrap up, but you can also just use heat tracking and just analyze which parts of your page is kind of reviewed the most and if people actually read your about the company bit.
You can't improve what you can't measure.
I'm going to just throw a random one out there because I think this is actually true with no evidence because, you know, for me, it's all conjecture. Yeah? I really value sort of just random theories. But I think the about page, it needs to be at the end of the advert, not the beginning, because when the person's already clicked on the ad, they're looking at the thing. You need to do direct address on the first paragraph. So in other words, you need to talk exactly why you are hiring for this role, why this person is required. You don't just, if you're talking about yourself, it's classic like feature selling. You need to address who's looked at the advert, who's attracted by the compensation, attracted by the job title, location, or whatever it might be, and then say, look, we're hiring for this reason. And then that is direct address to the candidate. Anyway, that's just my anecdote. Go ahead, Mo.
No, nothing. I have to go.
Oh, you need to go. Okay. I think everyone needs to go. So no worries. That's going to be the end of the show, folks. I hope you've got some interest in there. Robin, I'm not sure when the latest report is coming out from AppCast. When is this happening? We need to get an update on this, really.
Yeah, we've completed the 2021 recruitment marketing benchmark report. So I can share that with you after the call. And however you want to distribute that to the wider audience, we can certainly do so. However, we've then got a load of other white papers that complement that in terms of writing job adverts and so on.
And that's coming out later on in the year, is that right?
Yeah, already available.
Mate, share it in the chat stream or share it with me afterwards and I'll make sure everyone gets it.
Don't make me share stuff when I'm online. Let me send it to you afterwards.
All right, no worries. I agree. That's probably a safety first policy. I totally agree. Okay, that's about it, everybody. We're out of time. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you, Yelma, for joining the show. Great to have you guys on. We'll make sure you're back to join us at a later time. Robin, great to see you. Thanks for jumping on. I appreciate you got a bit of a dodgy throat as well, man. So thanks for coming on in anyway and battling through. I hope you have a good weekend, sir. And send me the info on email, right? And I'll make sure everyone gets it. Okay, and Mo, you got to go. So thank you so much for joining us and co-piloting this show. Great to see you. And yeah, hopefully I'll see you soon, whether you're in town or whatever. And I'm obviously going to Spain in a couple of months, right? Later this summer. So I'll make sure I'll see you guys then.
Yeah, lovely. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.
Cool. Wasn't that great, guys? I really enjoyed that show. I think, again, this is just too big a topic to do in 1 hour. We could absolutely talk about how to write job ads in a more effective way. And by the way, this is a very different way of writing job ads to the creative style, which I also want to explore, because I think there's two ways to think about how you write job ads. This is where you've already made the commitment to post to these job boards, but there's another way to describe and use job ads in a different way. Like, do you do it in a social setting, for instance, a social network, or none of this stuff would be relevant? Here is where maybe more creativity is required. Anyway, we're going to get other people to talk about that at another time. Right, if you've enjoyed the show, make sure you follow the channel. We're back next week. We're going to be doing data-driven recruiting. How do you become a data-driven recruiter? We've got some great examples and case studies from people who think they've done it. Let's examine this in a bit more detail. How do people make this journey? So follow the channel if you want to get an update on that. Okay, that's about it, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks for watching.